Abdul Muttalib, the grandfather of the Prophet, played a very big role in the plan that Allah has destined and decreed, and in the grand design his role was eminent in bringing about the coming of the birth of the Prophet. Much of this history that we are speaking of, even though written in books of history like Tabari and Bidaya wa Nihaya and Ibn Hisham, Ibn Asir, all the history books that are the history of Muslims, this history is written there, but still it is kept hidden, because obviously if a person goes through this history and reads the history of Islam, then the role of Prophet, the role of Prophet Muhammad would be completely different than what we are told today by the rest of the Muslims. It would be a completely different role. Right now you will see that as we learn about history, and when Allah speaks about the Prophet, He says that we have mentioned you in the books of the previous prophets. We have mentioned you, O Muhammad, we have mentioned you in Tawrat and Injil, so that those people who read those books would be ready for you and would be prepared for you. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And hence, many people, even you will see that the Jews who moved to the Middle Eastern region had initially moved there because of the news that they had gotten that the Prophet, the last messenger, is going to come in that region. And as they moved there, and obviously their initial intention changed. Now they were more afraid of his coming than excited. The Jews, at first they came there because to help the Prophet. But then as their children settled down there and they grew there and everything went forward, now you see that they, instead of being excited about the coming of the Prophet and seeing the signs of the Prophet, they were vehemently trying to fight the signs of the coming of the Prophet. Same as many people, for example, when they heard about the signs of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, ajallallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Now, a lot of people who actually take these signs seriously might be excited initially. But then what happens is that as the time comes closer and they get settled down and life becomes good for them, then you know what? When they hear about the signs of the Imam, they're not excited anymore. There's more fear in them. People right now, and I'm not talking about other people, I'm talking about our own people, are more afraid of the coming of Imam Zaman than they're excited. They're not excited when they hear the signs. They're like, is it really going to happen? In the back of their mind, they're like hoping it won't, because life as they know it is going to change. And unfortunately, here's what happens. This has been historically true, over and over again experienced, that people, for example, who are oppressed, they want a change because that's going to help their situation. And people who are good don't want any change because that's going to hurt their situation. So neither are the poor nor the rich waiting for the Imam sincerely. Those who are oppressed and are being killed everywhere by Wahhabis and that, they are waiting so that the Imam can kill the Wahhabis. They're not here to help the Imam. Their intention is not purely for the Imam. Their intention is, hey, it's in my self-interest that he comes. And those who are well off and leading good lives, they don't want the Imam to come back. Because when he comes back, he's going to take that away from them. So none of the sides are really, truly, sincerely waiting for the coming of the Imam, just like the Jews at the time of that period before the Prophet came were waiting for the Jews. We're waiting for the advent of Prophet Muhammad. Yeah, the Jews were, now you see, did not want the Prophet to come. So when they saw the light of the Prophet that was written in their books and told by their elders in Hashim, and after Hashim they saw it in Abdul Manaf, then in Abdul Muttalib, they knew that the light has come because they've seen the sign. But this sign was more of, you can say, not certain. You know, you can say that it was a matter of opinion. People looked at, for example, Abdul Muttalib and the light that he had on his forehead, or Abdullah, the light that he has on his forehead, and they'll say, hey, he looks like the Prophet, and others would say, well, that's your opinion. It can't be the case, right? So that was a matter of opinion, but still, the fact that such a sign was apparent gave them fear. But in Sham, in Syria, they actually had a sign that was certain. And that sign that Allah had kept for them was the shirt of Prophet Yahya. The shirt of Prophet Yahya that was kept at the synagogue in Sham was kept there, and the story behind it was that when the father of the Prophet is going to be born, then the shirt will start to bleed. Shirt will start to bleed. It's an abnormal activity. For example, you know, you see all kinds of these sorts of activities happening throughout, where you see, like, for example, the alam bleeding, or, you know, something like that happening. The shirt of Prophet Yahya was kept there, and it was said that when this shirt bleeds, you know that the last Prophet's father was born, is born. So when Abdullah was born, the shirt started bleeding, and that was a sure, certain, clear-cut sign for those Jews in Sham that the last messenger is coming. There was no doubt about that. This was written there, and they have been waiting centuries with this shirt. It was kept, and there it was. And so now when it started to bleed, now everyone became aware of this, and the news spread around amongst the Jews in the region, the spread around that, you know what, this sign has come out true, and the father of the Prophet has been born. So on one hand, you see that the Jews are getting ready for the advent of the Prophet. And they are now trying to destroy this light and prevent it from even coming out into life. And you saw that the different assaults and attacks that they had made on Hashim and Abdul Muttalib. So that on one side is happening. On the other side, you see that Allah has His own plan, and that plan is being made out or carried out by the ancestors of the Prophet. We came to Abdul Muttalib. Abdul Muttalib discovered the well of Zamzam, the Zamzam well that was hidden for thousands of years. No one knew of its existence until a vision came to him in his dream and told him where this well was. He went there, dug the well with his son, and discovered the well. When the well was discovered, initially some people said, hey, it's ours also, and they, you know, they staked claim on it. In other words, they wanted ownership of it. Those disputes didn't go far. Abdul Muttalib became the sole owner and manager of the well, and the people of Makkah, because of the discovery of this well, became obligated to Abdul Muttalib. Allah is preparing the grounds for Rasulullah to be born and for the people to accept him. And here you see on one hand how with the discovery of Zamzam, now all of Meccans, all the Meccans, all the Quraysh, everyone was obligated to Abdul Muttalib and said, he's the man, he's our leader, there's no doubt about it. He has discovered the well of Zamzam, it's all due to him, and he's the person that we all look up to. So on one hand, he established the authority and leadership of Abdul Muttalib. Abdul Muttalib, while digging the well, made a vow to Allah. Made a vow saying that Allah, at that time he had only one son. He said, Allah, if you give me 10 sons, then I will sacrifice one for you. And so the well was discovered. Life went on. He got married again and had more children. And especially in the vision that he saw in the well. The vision that he saw in the well, which told him to marry a lady from the tribe of Makhzun, Bani Makhzun. He went there and married a woman by the name of Fatima. And from her had three children. From her had three children. Abu Talib, Zubair, not that Zubair that you all know of, some other Zubair, that was his brother, and Abdullah, the father of the Prophet. Three children were born to this mother. So now you see that Abdullah and Abu Talib were brothers both from their father and mother, meaning that they were brothers by both parents. And hence they were close. And then there are four other sisters from the same mother. So now what happened is that when the time came and 10 children were born, so now Abdul Muttalib saw the 10 children and said, I must now fulfill my vow that I made to Allah. Now, after many years, people didn't even know about this vow. If he had kept quiet, no one would have asked him or doubted him. No one would have even known that this vow existed. He made it individually, all alone, next to the Kaaba, when no one heard it. Only he knew about it. And the issue now was to kill one of his sons, slaughter one of his sons. If he had just kept quiet, no one would have known about it. But he himself declared it. He says, listen, I had made a vow that if I had 10 sons, I would sacrifice one for Allah's sake. Now I have 10 sons. And now I must sacrifice one for Allah's sake. So now everyone's like, hey, listen, you know, we never heard you made this vow, and so why are you going through this and all these things at first? You know, he said, no, I have to go with this vow. Allah has blessed me and fulfilled his promise and his side of the deal. I must fulfill my side of the deal. So he told his children that, and he told his sons that, listen, one of you is going to be sacrificed. And tomorrow we are going to decide who. Now the sons were all excited. They did not complain. They did not desist, or they did not try to escape this. They all were with him. They said, yes, we are with you, Father. Really, we are with you, Father. And we have to understand this, right? This is really one of those, you know, special moments in history, just like the moment of Ibrahim and Ismail. Ibrahim asked one son, are you ready for sacrifice? He said, yes. Abdul Muttalib is asking 10 sons, and they're all saying, yes, we are ready. Yes, we are ready to be sacrificed. And he says, all right then, in the morning we'll decide. So what happened is that they went to the Kaaba. They put the names in the Kaaba. And the names were going to be chosen from inside the Kaaba. The person who was going to choose was appointed. Everyone was waiting outside. The children were waiting outside. Abdul Muttalib is waiting outside. The person comes out, doesn't say much, makes an announcement, just one word, and says, Abdullah. Of all the sons, Abdullah's name was chosen, the most beloved. of Abdul Muttalib. Abdul Muttalib loved him the most. He was enamored by him. Abdullah was the one who had the light from Abdul Muttalib. No one else had the light on their forehead but Abdullah. Abdul Muttalib knew this. All the other sons knew this. And as soon as that happened, Abdul Muttalib went to Abdullah. Abdullah, right away, he's 10 years old. He says, "Father, hasten with what you have been told and I'm ready for this. Make haste and let us do this." Abdul Muttalib is ready. Abdullah is ready. But when the other brothers hear this, especially Abu Talib, Abu Talib comes and grabs his father and says, "Father, please sacrifice me instead. Not my brother. Sacrifice me instead. I am ready for this. Let him be." You know, whatever pre-knowledge that they have, and I don't know if they had any pre-knowledge or not, of who and what is going to happen in the future, but the one thing that they did know was that Abdullah was special because he held the light, and they all knew that this is the light of prophethood. Abu Talib wanted himself to be sacrificed. Abu Talib wasn't that old also, he was 12 years old. Abu Talib was saying, "Let me be the one." And now he says, "No, it has to be Abdullah. The name is Abdullah. We have to sacrifice Abdullah." So now the whole city, now the time was appointed for the sacrifice. The whole city came out. The Quraysh came out. They came out to see what's going on. Because here's the thing. Abdul Muttalib is the leader of Makkah. And they really wanted to see, is he really going to kill his son? His own son. They really wanted to see that. So everyone is out there. And when they saw that Abdullah's name is there, they all were moved by this. Because they knew that Abdul Muttalib loved Abdullah the most. And Abdullah was the most special one amongst them. He was the most special one. And everyone in the city was moved. And now, as they were getting ready for the slaughter, they all started crying. They all started crying. And they said, "Maybe there's another way out of this. Maybe Allah will be happy with something else. Why do you have to kill your son?" Now let me stop here for a minute, right? Before I go forward. My friends, you know, la ilaha illallah, a lot of times, you know, we might make oaths like these or vows like these. Not so drastic, but you know what? Sometimes we do make vows like these. We go to, for example, ziyarat, you know, to the haram of Hazrat Abbas or, you know, Imam Hussein, to Karbala. We go there and make a vow that, you know what, if you give me a son, then I will do this. If you give me a this, then I will do that. And sometimes we overdo it, you know, and we make big claims there. Right? "Allah, please give me a child. And if you give me a child, then, you know what, I will donate all my wealth to the local masjid." You know, when, you know, now when Allah gives you the child, then you're like, "Okay, you know what? I did make this vow, but no one heard it." Right? First you had to, you know, you try to hide it from others, right? And then, you know, when you had to give your wealth over to the masjid, then you're saying, "But what about his education?" What happened there? You know? And so 100 excuses come to mind and weaken our resolve. You can testify to this maybe in your own life. See what happens and you can testify to this. See what's going on in your life. And here it is. Now we haven't done something drastic. We didn't say, "Allah, if you give me two sons, I'll kill one." You know, we didn't say anything like that. But Abdul Muttalib did. Now to go ahead with this. Now obviously, you know, as a rule in Islam, if you do make a vow that is drastic, meaning that it is undoable or it might cause a lot of stress and strain, even Allah allows you not to do it. Allah says, "Do not do that." For example, if it is out of your means, that you say that, you know what, if I have a child, I'll fast for 1 year straight. It's not in your means. You can't do it. It's very difficult for you. So Allah says, all right, if you made a nazar and a mannat like this, then it's okay for you not to do it. Give a sadaqah instead. Finish. He allows you to do that. But here you see the resolve of Abdul Muttalib, who says, no, I will do this. So now he wants to do this and he's adamant about it. On one hand, he's adamant about it, and on the other hand, everyone is upset about it. Everyone is saying, no, don't do this. So now what happened is that as he's about to do it, one person from the crowd, it said either one person or a very intelligent lady in Makkah, either of these two situations, they said, all right, let's take the advice of this person. They asked that person. They asked the person, and so that lady said that, here's what you do instead. You want Allah to be happy? Then cast lots. On one hand, write the name of Abdullah. On the other hand, write the name of 10 camels. And cast the lot. If Abdullah's name comes up, then you cast again. Cast again and add 10 more camels to that. And 10 more camels to that until Abdullah's name doesn't come up and the camel's name came. You're casting that, you know, lots. Okay, Abdul Muttalib says that sounds reasonable. So he goes and writes the name of Abdullah in one hand and 10 camels on the other hand. And they cast the lot and Abdullah's name comes, meaning that slaughter Abdullah. So it says add 10 more camels. 10 more camels are added, right? More camels are added. Then again, Abdullah's name comes. 10 more camels I am added, 30, 40, 50, goes on till it comes to 90. When it came to 90 camels on one side and Abdullah on the other side, and still Abdullah's name, 9 times Abdullah's name comes at the end, right? Now, Abdul Muttalib is going on because he loves Abdullah on one hand. He says, let's see if this works on the other hand. And now after 9 times comes, he says, listen, enough of this game. The name of Abdullah is decided. I am going to slaughter him and offer him for Allah, and that's it. No one can stop me. And everyone said, all right, you know what? One more time, just one more time. And if Abdullah's name comes right now, we will not stop you. Go ahead. Make him an offering. Make him as a sacrifice. All right, so Abdul Muttalib says, go ahead. And this time when it's cast, on one hand, 100 camels, and on the other hand, Abdullah, when this time it's cast, then it's the camels that come. 100 camels. And as soon as the 100 camels come, everyone starts to rejoice and jump up and down. The whole city is rejoicing. The news reaches the mother Fatima, and she's also happy that her son is saved. But the only one who's not happy is Abdul Muttalib. He says, wait a minute. You know, no. 9 times it was the camels, meaning Abdullah's name. 1 time is the camel. This is an easy way out. No, we'll do it again. He said, we'll do it again. He said, but why? You know, you got the name out. No, we'll do it again because I'm not satisfied. And he does it again. And this time, again, the camel's name. Then 3 times again, he says it. 3 times the camel's name. Now, as he was going, he wasn't happy. There was no satisfaction in him. He wanted to make sure that what he's doing is right and does not displease Allah. My friends, these are the ancestors of Rasulullah. These are the people that when you look at these people, they are really the ones who are bringing Rasulullah into life. They are preparing the ground for his appearance. And hence, imagine how deep is their resolve and their trust in Allah. After 3 times, then a voice comes to Abdul Muttalib and says, Abdul Muttalib, Allah has accepted the sacrifice of your son and he is pleased with your offering. You do not need to kill him. And when he hears that, that's when he becomes satisfied and says, yes, now I'm okay with this. And Abdullah remained alive.
Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad. Well, obviously, you know, Abdullah is alive, tension is over, people are relieved, everyone's now just wiping off their brows with perspiration, you know, and everything that happened. So now there's a big party, you know, and everyone is now, you know, trying to congratulate the mother of Abdullah. They're all like lined up into the house of Abdullah saying, you know, congratulations, you know, your son has been saved, and so on and so forth. Everything is happening. My friends, now what happened? In order to assassinate Abdullah, the first plot of the local Jews in that place, those who were local and had seen what's going on, local Jews, what they did is that they sent in a Jewish woman, camouflaged as an Arab, who comes over there into the house of Fatima bint Amr, the mother of Abdullah, comes there and says, you know, she looks at him, strange lady, stranger, says, who are you? And she introduces himself, oh, I'm from, you know, this tribe, and, you know, I just came to say congratulations, you know, and here's some food for you. The food was poisoned. The food was poisoned, and she gave the food to Fatima and says, this is for you all, I just came to say congratulations, thank you, goodbye. And she left. She left, the food was still there. Now, other people also brought in the food. So when Abdul Muttalib and Abdullah came back home, so Fatima offered them, you know, looked at all the food that came here, you know, like for example, other people bring food, this and that. Some people brought, you know, dal, and some people brought, you know, adas, and some people brought bread, you know. And so, you know, she brought biryani, you know. Yeah, she brought biryani, and hers was the best. You know, hers was the most tasty, and it looked good also. It was the best. So Fatima, obviously out of all the food, offered this food to Abdul Muttalib and Abdullah and said, here, eat, you are hungry. She offered this food. And this is, you know, obviously a lot of times we have to be very careful of good food, you know, not being misguided by good food, you know, because usually when the enemies are giving you something, it's always good and always looks pretty. Right, and a lot of times we fall for that, and that's how we destroy ourselves. Don't fall for what the enemies are giving you. Be careful. Even if it looks good, don't take it from them. Right, this is when she offered them the food and they're ready to eat it. In the books it's written that the food told Abdullah, do not eat me. The food itself told him, do not eat me. Right, in the books, in the history books is written, right? You know that, don't eat me. When he heard that, and he said, I am poisoned. When it says that, then right away they left the food. Now they couldn't find the woman, but this was one of the attempts that was made on Abdullah's life. That was the first time of many attempts that will be made on his life. As I said, the signs have become clear. The animosity of the Jews was clear. So now they wanted to come and they wanted to kill him. But it wasn't easy because Abdullah was always surrounded by his father and his brothers. He had a father like Abdul Muttalib, the chief of Makkah, and he had 9 brothers who were all around him and always protecting him. And that's how he grew up. And that's why the Jews never got a chance to get close to him. Until Abdullah was 25 years old. Abdullah, when he became 25 years old, at one point and one day, and it happened such that a band of Jews had come from Sham to Makkah to assassinate Abdullah. And they came masquerading as traders, merchants. Now obviously when they came as merchants, they, you know, they brought in goods. Now they couldn't sell the goods because if they sold the goods, they had to leave, you know, Makkah. So if you sold the goods, why are you waiting around? Go back home, right? So what they did, in order not to sell the goods, they overpriced the goods, right? So something that was $1 would cost $1,000, you know? And so the Meccans, when they came for shopping at the Jewish stall that was there, they ask the price, they say, you know, it's 1,000 dirhams. What? 1,000 dirhams? It's not even worth $1. Yeah, well, you know, you want to buy it or not. So no one wanted to buy it, and the Meccans were like, you know, hey, these guys don't want to sell anything, right? So why? Because they didn't want to sell anything. They just wanted time to make a plot, time to do their homework. They didn't want to sell anything. They just made a store there. They made a place there in the market, and they used that as a base in order to make a plan. When they went out and made a plan, they appointed some spies on Abdullah to always see where Abdullah is going, to see if you can find him alone, to see if there's a chance where we can get close to him. And this is how he was being followed. And one day when Abdullah was alone, went outside of Makkah, on the outskirts of Makkah, alone, he went out there for hunting. He went there for hunting alone, and this was one of the rare moments that had ever happened. And the spies went after them. They saw them. They saw Abdullah alone. And as the spies saw Abdullah alone, they informed the next batch of people who came there. And soon they were able to get Abdullah into a place. Now Abdullah, you know, obviously wasn't someone who's going to back down from a fight. Alright, Abdullah is from Bani Hashim. And these people were brave and they were ready to fight. So now, as these people came closer, Abdullah saw that these guys don't have good intentions. So, you know, for example, as they came close, Abdullah said, what do you want? And they're like, oh, you know, nothing, we just want to come close to you and all that, right? And as they came like that, right? So Abdullah took out his arrows and started shooting. He killed some of them. They fell back. And then what happened is they said, you know what, instead of attacking right now, let's wait for the rest of the people to come. So the spies went and brought the rest of the Jews. Most of the Jews came. And now it was a horde of people there. And now they're ready for ambushing Abdullah, who was alone. Abdullah was alone, and these people were ready to ambush him. So they took out their arrows and started shooting. And as they shot at him, the arrows would not reach Abdullah. It would come and drop down to the ground in front of Abdullah. And Abdullah was on the other hand shooting at them. And as if there was an invisible barrier that was between them and Abdullah. They saw that all the arrows that they shot is not going towards Abdullah, it's dropping on the ground. It was at that moment, you know, when Abdullah was trying to fight them off all alone, he was on the ground trying to fight them off, and all this horde, they said nearly over 100 people, trying to ambush him. Then there was a man who walked by there. One man who walked by there. His name was Wahab. He was from Bani Zuhra. If you remember the name Bani Zuhra, I mentioned to you when I mentioned Abdul Muttalib and the meeting he had with an astrologer. And the astrologer said that you will be both the ruler and you will have the last prophethood in you. Except that you'll have to share it with Bani Zuhra. You'll have to share it with Bani Zuhra. So at that time, Abdul Muttalib thought that he has to get married into Bani Zuhra, and he did get a wife from Bani Zuhra, right? But later on, he'll find out what that statement actually meant. This person, Wahab, he saw this. He saw one man on the ground trying to fight off a horde of people shooting arrows at them, and he saw a light that came from the heavens and is going into his head. He saw this light and he says, whoa, who is this person? As he looked closer, he saw that, well, this is Abdullah, the son of Abdul Muttalib, our leader. And as soon as he heard that, he ran towards Makkah, to the center of Makkah, and he told Abdul Muttalib and everyone, look what's happening to Abdullah, come and save him. And they all went in a hurry on their horses. They sped and they came there and obviously were able to defend Abdullah and imprison the Jews. They saved Abdullah, his life was saved, and the Jews who were there trying to hurt him were imprisoned. Now obviously, you know, because they were doing this to Abdullah, they were going to be killed. So the Jews said, please listen, we owe some money to people here, let us pay off our debts and then you can do whatever you want with us. Abdul Muttalib says, alright, you know, hey, you know, you talk about that, I will make that happen. So they took the Jews as prisoners They kept half the Jews in the house of this Wahhab and half the Jews in the house of Abdul Muttalib. Now let's come to an ending on this, right? As this Wahhab, when he saw that, he was mesmerized by Abdullah. He was mesmerized by Abdullah and he came home and his wife spoke with him. He says, "What happened? You look like worried, anxious." He says, "Yes, I saw someone today that truly mesmerized me. Nothing else. His bravery, his courage, and his beauty." Abdullah was a beautiful, handsome man, very handsome man. He was so handsome that, it's said that, in Makkah, all the girls of Makkah were, trying to get married to him, right? Yeah, even all the, like for example, the leaders and rulers, used to be like, around, send their proposals. But Abdullah always refused them. He never accepted any one of them. In fact, one time a lady came who was a research scholar. Yeah, believe it or not, in those days you had research scholars, right? One lady who used to research about previous prophets and their sayings. And she had heard about the light of Prophet Hud in the head of his ancestors, right? And she saw Abdullah with that. And she even came and said, offered herself to Abdullah and said, "Please marry me. Marry me." And so Abdullah refused. He said, "No, I'm not going to marry you." Right? And then later on, afterwards, when Abdullah got married, he came there, he saw the lady, he said, "Don't you want to marry me?" He says, "No." He said, "Why not?" "Because the reason I wanted to marry you is gone." Meaning the light that you had in your forehead is no more. Meaning it's gone. I wanted that light to go from my womb to my children. I wanted that. But then it didn't happen with her. But here, Wahhab, he said that I want to now go and ask Abdul Muttalib for Abdullah's hand in marriage to my daughter. To my daughter. And the mother said, his wife said, "Are you crazy? Abdul Muttalib is the leader. Look at who we are. Who are we? We are nothing." And Wahhab was like, "Yes, we are nothing compared to them. But you know what? We have one thing that's very strong." He said, "What is that?" He says, "I saved Abdullah's life today. And maybe because of that, Abdul Muttalib might agree." So the next day, Wahhab went there and said, "Listen, I don't want anything for saving the life of your son, except that you take my daughter as his wife." Abdul Muttalib says, "All right, let's ask Abdullah." And after, for the first time in his life, Abdullah says, "Yes, I want to marry her." Wahab's daughter's name was Amina. Amina bint Wahab, the mother of Rasulullah. And that's how they got married. Now obviously we will go into what happened with what's next. But Abdullah, with his father and his brother, after the marriage went to Arafat to pray. Arafat is a plain near Makkah where everyone goes for Hajj. They went there, and this used to be habit, they used to go there to pray, and Abdullah went there to pray, and in that prayer he saw, as he was praying, a stream of water appear in front of him and pass by him. He put his hand in there. It was cold. In the hot desert he had a cold stream running. And it smelled, the fragrance was mesmerizing. He took the water in his hand and he drank it. And he wanted to now tell his brothers and father, "Look, there's a stream here, drink some water here." And as soon as he turned and saw back, the stream disappeared. He came to his father, Abdul Muttalib, and says, "Father, this is what I saw here. A stream went by and I drank from it." When Abdul Muttalib heard that, he says, "Listen, son, do not tell anyone this." And he was like, "Okay." And then Abdul Muttalib smiled. He says, "I will tell you the secret behind this. There's a secret that you need to know. It'll take about 15 minutes. So we'll do it tomorrow." I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and the blessing to be on the right path. Wisdom to understand His guidance.